Good evening. We are studying A Christian Responsibility to the Poor, and we have covered the sections that give us everything that we need to understand that it is a commandment and an expectation to help the poor. Remember the poor, as I think Paul said in Galatians. We did determine that also God had different expectations sometimes than those do here, as we have our own misguided perception of how to help the poor and who the poor really were. We saw two examples given. Jesus said that the lady that threw the two mites in the collection plate, she threw all of her living. So we saw either a poor person either has absolutely nothing, which is a category that we saw in the Old Testament, including the poor widow probably, or they had next to nothing, and that is the poor. And we saw in the Old Testament through several scriptures that God wanted the people to feed them for that day, wanted to make sure they did not go hungry, but they were not to go in and, as a standard rule, gather to take back and to possibly put up or whatever. And then we also noticed last time about how the United States has had a war against poverty, and they determined who the poor was according to the government. And, you know, as the government has rarely aligned itself with the God. And so we saw that the poor constitutes in poverty if they make $22,350 for a household of four. And we had to remember that that did not take into account any special programs that is given, such as welfare, housing, or any kind of food stamps, WIC programs, anything that did not go into that category. So really, you know, you weren't anything like the poor as God talked about. God would never consider people like that poor that had a job and made some kind of a living. As we looked at some of the causes of poverty, we saw that probably a lot of times those that are in that classification waste their money, probably. Not in all cases, as we saw other occasions where people got poor that wasn't necessarily because of their own doing. Sometimes it's because of other people's doing, as we went over that as well. So as we have accepted, I hope, that God expects us to help truly the poor, our problem arises in how do we find the poor. We looked a little bit at that last time, and there are people that think in the ministries that we should give to organizations that are experts at determining who is poor and not just ourselves, like if people come in and expect handouts. I see these people downtown and at various places selling these papers, and they actually get a business license to do this, and they sell these papers. I don't know anything about those folks. It seems to me if they can stand there all day selling papers, they could go work somewhere just as easily. We don't know the story behind that, but there are people that... Hello, come in. There are people that that do know the story behind some of these folks. So, you know, used to be the subjects were that we did not talk about were things like... So it used to be the forbidden subjects that we would not allow to talk about. One of them was sex, right? You didn't talk about sex. Now we can't get away from that talk. That's everywhere, every television program we come on. And death, people don't like talking about death. But today's time, it's finances. We don't like to air our finances publicly, do we? That's something that we keep very private. And the interesting thing about that was, if we compare that to how they did it in the first century, that's typically opposite. They had all things in common, it said in Acts chapter 2, didn't it? And so, even sermons about lifestyle and obligations to the poor is kind of an insult to boundaries. Our boundaries that we don't like people telling us what to do with our money. The American slogan is what we gain, we get to do with what we want to. Right? That's what we feel because we've worked hard to earn it, and that is what we kind of want to go. But the problem is we're supposed to help the poor. Well, the way the Old Testament helped the poor, and we saw things like allowing people to glean the fields, correct? We saw that in Deuteronomy 23 and again in Leviticus 19. But let me ask you the question, how effective would that be today? Well, could someone come and glean at your field, at your crops? How many people are farmers here? It's a different area, isn't it? Okay, Carolyn, clearly they could come and glean at yours. And so it's just not an effective way to help the poor, that we can't feed them in that kind of way, come and glean their fields, and we didn't live in the climate. Back over there in this Palestine, it was warm all the time, and I'm sure crops grew readily all year long. But we have to come up with a new way to fulfill this commandment. And so basically we have to try to first determine who are the poor, find them, whoever they are and wherever they are, and do our obligation to God to try to fulfill that commandment. So one of the things that we could do to do that is we can give money, right? But the problem with giving money today is most people live check to check, don't they? I mean, a lot of people do. And so we think, are you kidding? I can't give money to help the poor. They say, I'm poor myself. Well, we would never really be considered poor. I've been guilty of saying that as well. But I think a bigger problem we have is materialism, that our lifestyle is created by our own selves such that we are crippled to be able to do anything for God. We don't necessarily always just consider it in the materialism world. What about in our time-wise? What do we do with our time? We have no time for anything. If we have any time, we sign up for groups and clubs and softball leagues and everything we can possibly do. We have our routines down by which we don't hardly have a night or a Saturday free, do we? And so that's what we do. We don't become good stewards of what God gave us. He gives us the exact same amount of time, yet some people do all kinds of things for people. They serve well, don't they? We know the commandments in Matthew 25 that He lines us up aside. We're supposed to be visiting the sick, right? We're supposed to be clothing the naked and feeding the hungry, all those kinds of things, and yet why don't we do this? Because it's our lifestyle. Now, we talked about one of the ways that people are poor is they voluntarily took a vow of poverty. Who was the person that we named foremost? Jesus in 6:20 of Luke said that he didn't have anywhere to even lay his head. The foxes have holes. And so he voluntarily impoverished himself and to totally serve. You ever thought why he chose and he commanded his apostles that followed him around to not have material things? Remember when he sent them out, what did he tell them? Don't you be carrying extra coats. I don't want you to have scripts in your pocket. Wonder why he would not want them to do that. He gave a little bit of a reason. When they go into people's homes, he said, you're worthy you're a teacher. You're working for God. You're worthy to be fed. But there's other reasons. Burdens bear us down. Nothing. Anything that we own. And I've heard people say, you've heard me say before that I'm trying to spend the rest of my life getting rid of my stuff. Because I've realized and made a decision that I want to minimize the rest of my life to get down to where I don't have so much stuff to take care of. It's a lifestyle issue. Now, the question we have to ask is, people, they keep consuming. We keep consuming. You know, you hear consumer price index. The consumer, we was looking at it this morning, Christina, that we heard about it, the consumer confidence, I think, index. Basically, how much confidence does a consumer have today to go out and what? Consume more or to buy more. Consumers prop up this economy. And we're trying to get people to get a demand for products. So we will buy more, which will cause companies to hire people so they can make more stuff. You know, that's what this country is based upon. So we are fed this bill of goods that we ought to buy, buy, buy if we have the money. The question we have to ask is, how much is enough? If I were to ask you, Eddie, how much do you think you need of any given thing? It depends on how much you like that, isn't it? If it's ice cream, I have been known to have 8 half gallons of ice cream in my freezer. I'm not kidding it. What kind of a crazy person has that much ice cream? They would put my favorite kind on sale and I would buy up because I ate it every night, sometimes twice a day. You can go through a lot. And so how much is enough? That's an individual preference, isn't it?
Well, the more you have, the more you want.
That's an excellent slogan or a cliche that they put out there. It has been said that there are two ways to determine when you've had enough. One is to desire to accumulate more and more, or another way is to what? To desire less. That would make you have enough if you didn't want so much. So to live less is going to have to always be something voluntary. Nobody can tell us that you can't have this if we have any means by which we can possibly go after it and consume it. Now, if you're in prison, now we don't have the choice, but if we have the freedom that we have in this country, we can do as we will. So it has to be a personal vow, just like Jesus took. Do you think Jesus could have made money? He had a skill. He was a carpenter. But it's the choices that we make. So if we wanted to kind of take a look at that into our own lives, to possibly live on less, that we might have some funds over time to be able to do something for other people, to find the poor and possibly give to the poor, we would have to go through a process. Well, we'd have to try to discover what makes us happy. Now, what do I mean by that? I don't mean what the latest Nissan tells me would make me happy, or the new Cadillac CTS that they show looking real sharp going down the road. They say, oh, this is what you need. This will make you happy. That's what media tells us. We need to discover ourselves what will make you happy. And that needs to be based on wants versus needs. We have to determine, what is a want? Do I have to have a car? Or is that a want or a need? It depends on... There's thousands of people that don't have a car. I used to work with a person in 1988 when I went to Washington, D.C., because they had a pretty big mass transit system. And he didn't want a car. He went through all the reasons why he didn't ever want a car, talking about how much insurance costs, how much gas costs, and all the maintenance. And he said, I would rather have nothing, and if I can't get there on a transit car, he said, I'll take a cab, which is rare. He said, I live in a place, I position my life so that I don't have to drive all over the earth to get what I need. It's a lifestyle choice. And so a person who didn't want as much then could do more with what they individually had. We think about what are wants then. What needs, if you look at the definition, needs are what we need to survive. Food, shelter, clothing. Interesting, that is some of the things that Jesus said in Matthew 25 that we are supposed to be responsible for helping people. When someone has no clothing, they're starving to death, and they need some place to possibly get out of the bitter cold or whatever, that's something that's a need. But a want, like telephones, refrigerators, TVs, running water, would you ever think running water would be a want? Plumbing? Did anybody ever know anybody to not have plumbing? Indoor plumbing? Mary's father never had it till the day he died. He never put indoor plumbing in his house. Is that a want or a need? Now, we can go to extremes, can't we? But do we have to in this country? Do we have to say, I'm going to do without water and indoor plumbing so that I can help the poor? Probably not. But we might do without that new car every 2 to 3 years, or all the different things that we consume. You think about what the devil's goal is. The devil's goal is to increase our desire and or lust. If you notice in Matthew chapter 4, what he did with Jesus. Now, we can go to the one that did the best job. You know, he did everything he could to get Jesus, right? Because he gave him through the whole arsenal at him. If we take a look at beginning in verse 1 of Matthew chapter 4, Then was Jesus led up of the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted of the devil. And when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward ahungered. And when the tempter came to him, he said, If thou be the Son of God, command these stones to be made bread. So he assessed the situation as being Satan. He looked, what is the thing that this man would desire the most? Something to eat. Even to the point of lust. People think of lust in just sexual kind of things. Lust is nothing but an intense, insatiable desire for something. And if you hadn't eaten in 40 days, I believe I would be there. When if he gave me an idea, you think about how delirious you are. You know how you get when you don't eat all day? I get to where I can't even... You ask me a question, I'm like have to shake it off.
That was a miracle in itself. In 40 days and 40 nights, while they eating, you die.
Well, there's been people that's lived fasted for 40 days. You have to have water, for sure. But he asked him that, so he was trying to increase his desire. But Jesus fought against that. He combated that, didn't he? He said, It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God. And then we see in verse 5, Then the devil taketh him up into a holy city, and sitteth him on the pinnacle of the temple. Now, you think about it. Verse 6, he says, And saith to him, If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down, for it is written, He shall give his angels charge concerning thee. He was the Son of God. He had the power. He knew he was responsible and part of the Godhead that created the universe. And he knew the power that he had. And he tried to get him to use that power to increase the desire away from what God wanted him to do, to serve his own self. Both times he's trying to get him to serve himself. But again, Jesus said, went back and said that thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. In verse 8, And again the devil taketh him up to an exceeding high mountain, and showeth him all the kingdoms of the world, and the glory of them, and saith unto them, All these things I will give thee, if thou wilt fall down and worship me. But he didn't fall for that either. And so, what was Jesus, all he had to do was want a little bit more. But Jesus chose to desire less than what was available to him. Those things would have been made right there before him. All he had to have done is agree to them. And so, at our weakest time, that's what we have to fight against all the time. And I'm telling you, Satan wins all the time. And we have to turn right around. Now, thankfully, 1 John 1 tells us we can start over at any given time. We can confess that sin, can't we? And we can repent of that, and we can start afresh. But sometimes the consequences live with us, doesn't it? We go buy houses that are too much for that we can afford. I know people that are $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 in the hole. They're upside down. They don't know what to do with them. All they can do is walk away from them or continue to be buried in them. They desired probably more than they should have desired. And they have the same thing with all kinds of things that they have bought on debt. They desire more because they had the capability through people that allowed them to do that. Now, a person who cared about you would not give you money that you knew was foolish. Like you said, I want to borrow and buy this $42,000 vehicle. I don't make but minimum wage, but I will pay you back, because it goes to someone, a family member that's saved their money their whole life. That grandfather or grandmother's not going to do that. If they care, they're going to say that would be the worst thing I could do for you. But there are predators out there that will loan you the money. And that's one of the things that we looked at in the Bible that causes for people to be impoverished. And so Christians have to make concrete steps to combat that. You know, when I go over and look at Romans chapter 12, and he tells us point blank in verse 2, a commandment, and we need to be taking this very serious. He says that we are not to be conformed to this world. Now, is that hard? That's not hard to understand, and that's not hard to measure. Am I just like the world? Am I consuming more than I need? All wants that's beyond anything that any person would ever really need, just because I can. Now, God gives us free will, doesn't He? He gives us these great opportunities to make money. We sometimes have to take drastic measures to sever these kind of relationships, these kind of bites. When I go to 1 Timothy chapter 6, he tells us of the dangers here. 1 Timothy chapter 6, he says in verse 9, "But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare." What is that, "they that will be rich"? That's they that desire it so much, that's all they think about. "And into many foolish and hurtful lusts." That's that word again, that's that intense desire. "Which drown men in destruction and perdition, for the love of money is the root of all evil. Which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things, follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness." That's very interesting, isn't it? In verse 12, "Fight the good fight of faith." That's the fight we're supposed to fight. So the things that we're supposed to flee is materialism, because they will do no good for you if that's all you ever seek after. And look at the things in verse 11. We're supposed to follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness. Can the poorest of the poor follow after what God wants us to follow after? Absolutely. God takes away all obstacles to get to heaven. Now, the snares of the devil throws them out there for us to stumble on all the days of our life. He knows what we desire, and he entices us. Remember James 1? He says sin comes when we lust after it, and then he entices us a little bit more. Don't you want a little bit more? And so sometimes we have to break that tie. You know, when I go over to first, yes, go ahead. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And first, if we have the desire for this house, car, whatever we can't afford, then we are empowered by the faith, by the grandparents, we'll get our power somewhere. And then it's just bad.
It's awful.
Yeah.
And because we don't really take a look at it for what it is. And the thing about it is, the people that allow us to go beyond what we should, they ensnare us even more. And it's only but a smart person, when they had all this laid at their feet like Jesus did, was they could say, "Well, I can't afford that. Are you kidding me? I can't tell you the number of times that people tried to get me to buy certain things, and I would say, 'Are you crazy? I can't afford that.' I tell them that, and thankfully, I had the insight to realize I can't buy stuff like that. Now, I might have could have signed my name and bought things that so far exceeds the level that you can pay for. That's the problem. It ain't like borrowing money that for something small that you can pay for, even though that's enslaving, right? Because it takes away our choices. Once we get that, we're enslaved to that choice and for a period of time.
But I'm saying you could have bought whatever.
Mm-hmm.
A BMW version.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you wouldn't be tempted with that. They could put all the alcohol in front of me they wanted to, and I would just be wanting to get it out of my way.
But I'm saying a lot of people that are capable of buying whatever their desires might be, whatever, choose not to do that.
That's right. But they're that's a conscious, that's that voluntary vow against that stuff. You know, it takes a combative spirit against things that to say no to certain things. You're never going to be tempted with things that you're not interested in, but most of us all could stand to have something really nice, shiny, and sparkly, no matter what it is. New house, new car, new tools. You know, most of us would like that. I'm getting some no's.
There's nothing on this earth that I want. I know that's fine.
But that's taken a lot of maturity. You might have always been that way. Because
as long as I've got a roof over my head,
mm-hmm,
and something to eat,
that's very rare.
I am just like myself.
I know you are.
That's
very rare. But if you look back over most of our lives, we have been caught up in this very same thing, and we bought things, we've committed to things.
I've done that.
You know, I finally just gotten rid of AT&T. I want to get rid of every commitment, not things that I can't pay for. I want to get rid of every possible commitment that latches upon me. So now all I have is NES. It's the only thing that I pay for. You know, because I don't want any contracts. I don't want anything that they want to just sign me up for that I'm committed to that I can't cancel at any time. You know, these cell phone contracts, all these things they try to lock you in, even though they're not a lot of money, I just don't want that. I don't want anything that enslaves me in that way. But that's one step closer. Do you know, once you start partaking of that stuff, well, you know what, you're looking at something else, you're looking for something. I found that happens to me all the time. As soon as I start something, next thing you know, I got four of them. Or I got something just like it. And it's almost like all or none sometimes. You have to look at that.
It amazes to me to see what people pay for a cell phone. I cannot believe that. I know for a fact because all my kids have got cell phones.
And they have to get new ones every year or two. Every year or two, we have to get new stuff. We're going to stop here, and we're going to pick up here next time with some thoughts and some opportunities that even Jesus gave people choices, and we see the choices and the motivations behind the choices that those people made.